So we're back, and it's great to be back. CrimeCon in Nashville, Tennessee was a smash hit, wouldn't you say?
A smash hit, but it was a lot. It was a little overwhelming at times. In a good way, I think.
Yeah, in a good way. I mean, success means different things to different people. But as for me and Ricky, it meant surviving a road trip down I-75 in my dad's bus with over 300,000 miles on it.
Right. And two toddlers screaming at the top of their lungs at times.
Ooh. So yeah, there's a Cheerios covered the floor, sippy cups, you name it.
Right. I think I got hit with a cookie once. I was driving.
And this was a 9.5 hour drive one way, which was an epic adventure that tested our limits of human patience, bladder control, and just the tolerance to stay awake driving in between semi-trucks who were going at least 90.
Right. However, I have to say 9.5 hours would be like the perfect, you know, everything went well, right? It was more like 12 hours. I think with all the stops, the mental breakdowns, the getting gas and Red Bulls.
You drove most of the way.
I drove both times. I failed because I was going to drive the entire thing. I made it like an hour and a half until the destination. And then I was like, please.
You just tapped out.
Please, someone else drive.
And my dad took over, which is funny because he's like, I can handle it, no problem. And he could barely make it through that last hour. And you know, the crazy thing, I think it would have been a lot cheaper to just fly down. Like, just you and I, no kids, no parents, like,
right,
cruise on down there with our two little suitcases. No, we had a whole busload of stuff. Like, we're talking air fryers, bags of chicken nuggets, juice, like, just everything in this bus.
Every item I said, no, we shouldn't take, you brought.
We used it. How many times did we use that air fryer?
We did. We even brought a Keurig, but normally hotels have Keurigs. They didn't.
We stayed at the Gaylord Opryland, a beautiful hotel, absolutely stunning.
Right.
However, I feel like the rooms were like a little on the, like,
they weren't great.
They're kind of like a Best Western, you know. Yeah,
something like that, a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, but I mean, besides that, oh my gosh, the views in the gardens in. You can tell, like, they put so much love and care into, like, that area.
Love and care into capitalism. That place was so dang expensive.
Oh, my goodness. A drink would cost you, like, $20.
I had this weird feeling, like, if COVID would have been way, way worse or, like, not gotten better, maybe we would have all lived in these weird resort bubbles, like, little communities. That's what it felt like.
And it felt kind of weird when you stepped outside. You're like, oh, my God, the air. The grass. It was strange.
You know what's crazy, though, is I have horrible allergies at this time. We didn't leave the resort, and my allergies were great. I'm a bubble boy.
Maybe we should just do that to our house and never leave.
I don't need to leave.
No. But we absolutely loved Nashville, and if you ever get a chance to go to Nashville, Tennessee, you got to go. I mean, I saw some of the best nightlife I've ever seen.
Oh, like Broadway Street. Yeah. That was awesome.
Like, we're used to Pittsburgh, a small city that has, like, a, you know, just a couple bars here and there that are cool to go to. No, this whole entire street, Broadway, is like insane.
And there were bands in every single bar, back to back, back to back. You kept saying, let's change the radio, and we just went to another bar.
Oh, yeah. It was wild. And the drinks were expensive, but it was, like, totally worth it.
Oh, my God. It was, like, two beers. We bought like two Miller Lights and it was like 20 some dollars after tip.
Oh my gosh. And I was like, are you sure that's the right price? Or should you, like, you know, double check that? I don't know. We're just not used to going out too. So,
right. I have to say, as a business though, we probably almost did our whole year worth of tax write offs.
Done. We are done. Our tax guy is going to be so proud of us.
He is.
But yeah, I mean, Nashville was a smash hit. It was utterly exhausting. I think we put in 15,000 steps a day at least. It was
at least
basically an Olympic event, but also a CrimeCon event.
I need new shoes.
I need new shoes too.
I wore the soles out already.
I have blisters the size of grapes.
You do.
But yeah, we don't want to talk too much here, but we also want to talk a lot because we just loved CrimeCon. It was so cool to talk with the other podcasters.
Oh, that was awesome.
We got
awesome.
To meet them face to face. We've been
networking True Crime with Garage.
Them. Yeah, we sat next to True Crime Garage.
They're insane. Yeah, exactly.
But oh, such a good time. And we even like hung out with them after Crime Con, and we hung out with Live Laugh Larceny. They're amazing.
Awesome.
Got to check them out. And Asian Madness, and also Foul Play.
Yeah, Shane Waters is awesome. We met so many people through Shane. Like, I had talked to Shane before, but like meeting him in person was really, really cool.
Yeah, he has a really good group of friends that they all hang out with. They're all so awesome.
Like, Trail Went Cold was awesome. Obviously, we met like Big Mad True Crime. Heather's awesome. We always talk to Heather.
But how cool also was it to see some of the people that listen to our show?
We took so many pictures, and I've seen like three of them.
Yeah.
Like, we probably...
If you guys have a picture of us, please post it, because we want to see.
We probably took like 60 photos.
I did pee in the bushes in the garden, yeah. Which I'm probably on camera and will be arrested eventually.
I peed in the bush one time.
Yeah, but it's okay. I mean,
oh, one thing before we move on though. We signed like so many things, like badges and stickers and blah, blah, blah. No babies. But signing a t-shirt is way harder than I ever thought it would have been. I've never done that.
Is that a bad problem? Is that a problem for you, Ricky? Are you just struggling with that?
I actually did, because I kind of like had to like stencil my signature in. Like, I couldn't have the normal swipe, you know? It was eye-opening.
But yeah, hopefully they invite us to the next one, or maybe London. I don't know if
we got invited to London. We just have to make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, we might go to London. We might go to Denver, Colorado, which... places I've always wanted to be. So that would just be so awesome.
That would be a really cool one.
But it's expensive.
It was really expensive.
Hopefully, maybe next time we'll just get like a cheaper hotel. We don't need to go all crazy.
I don't know. It was convenient being, in the same hotel as the resort.
But we couldn't start this episode without boring you with our Crime Con experience, our first one.
Right.
And actually, this is our first time that we're in our new studio.
Yeah.
That just so happened to be here when we bought our house. Like, hello?
Yeah, it's a good start to a studio, and we're going to be able to do whatever we want with it, which is awesome.
We're no longer in a whisper room that is like tight fit side by side. Like, I'm looking at you right now, which is crazy.
That's awesome.
This is my dream. I've always wanted to have this set up, and I feel more comfortable and more relaxed. And I just feel like this is going to be so awesome. I want to do video. I got to get my hair done first, though. You know, things are happening.
I want to get my hair done.
Well, you can if you want to. Have you ever wondered what goes on into making this podcast? Well, it's all about thorough research and paying attention to every detail. Thankfully, we've learned to do this and more with
Masterclass.
So with Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. Masterclass is the only streaming platform where you can learn and grow with over 200 plus of the world's best. And for just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to every instructor.
That's not a lot of money.
Not at all. And you can access Masterclass on your phone, your computer, your smart TV, or even in audio mode. My favorite masterclass involved FBI criminal profiler John Douglas.
He was at Crime Con.
He was the one who we all know and love. And there was also the Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Bob Woodward, who can help you uncover the truth. And these classes really make a difference. 88% of members feel that Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives.
That's a lot of people.
Hasn't made a positive impact on your life, Ricky?
Not yet, but I want it to.
I feel like the biggest takeaway from using Masterclass is the unique opportunity to learn directly from world-renowned experts and professionals across various fields. So if you want to learn about leadership or high-quality cooking, Masterclass has it all.
Or voiceovers.
Yeah. And you have nothing to lose when your membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee.
You can do a lot in 30 days.
Right. So don't wait another moment and start your learning journey with Masterclass. Right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/crimesalad. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/crimesalad. masterclass.com/crimesalad.
Woo! That's good.
So, let's jump into this week's episode.
Let's do it.
All right, Ricky, are you ready?
I'm ready.
So let me tell you something that happened on October 27th, 1989. So it's 2:10 p.m. on a Friday, and the final bell rings at Bay Village Middle School. The doors swing open, and out walks 10-year-old Amy Mihaljevic. She's wearing these green pants and a pale green shirt with lavender trim. Her dirty blonde hair is a bit tousled, framing her face. And she's got these really neat turquoise horse head earrings on gold studs.
Wow, I like it.
She's also carrying a blue denim book bag with red piping. And she walks past the bike rack where her blue antique bicycle is parked. It's the same bike she rode to school that cold October morning. But instead of hopping on her bike, Amy decides to walk. She leaves her bike locked at the rack and hurries to catch up with a friend. Her friend is surprised to see her walking in this direction and asks, "Why are you going this way?" Amy explains that she's meeting up with a friend. Now, earlier that day, Amy and this friend sat side by side during a school assembly. They listened attentively while the new officer in town was giving a meet your local officer presentation. He talked about various things, including dangers of talking to strangers, which really seemed to catch everyone's attention. Later, Amy was heading to the popular hangout spot where all the kids went after school, a shopping plaza just a quarter mile from the school. Specifically, she was making her way to the Baskin-Robbins there. And so were all the other kids. As she arrived, she noticed a bunch of kids already gathered. Standing next to a pole in front of the Baskin-Robbins, she took in the view of the busy parking lot. Suddenly, one of the boys from school yelled Amy's name, trying to get her attention. But Amy didn't seem to notice or care. Nearby, another girl from school, who was also hanging out at the plaza, saw this and looked a bit curious or maybe concerned. She was probably wondering if the boy was going to bother Amy, but Amy stayed focused, ignoring the boy's attempts to get her attention. Then things got a bit more worrying. An older man walked up to Amy. The girl noticed Amy talking to this man she didn't know. He was wearing a beige windbreaker with a plaid lining, pressed khakis, and a button-up shirt. He had bushy, brownish hair hanging over his eyes. The details stood out. The man put a hand on Amy's back and guided her towards the parking lot. Now, this was quite obvious because the plaza was full of kids. School had just let out. There's no adults because they're all working. Seeing a guy around 30 years old approaching a much younger 10-year-old girl like this was really concerning because why would he be doing that? And like I said, at this time of day, most adults were still at home or working, and the area was mostly filled with kids.
But at the same time, I mean, couldn't this have been like her father or something like that, uncle, family member?
Yeah, and that's what the one girl who was watching this and seeing this happen, that's what she was thinking. Well, maybe it was someone she knew, because Amy appeared to be comfortable as he placed his hand on her back to direct her to the parking lot where his car was most likely parked. And then it was discovered that this was the last time anyone reportedly saw Amy Mihaljevic. Now, during this time at Amy's home, her older brother, Jason Mihaljevic, called their mom while she was at work to tell her that Amy hadn't come home from school. That day before she went to school, Amy informed her mother, Margaret, that she was staying after school for auditions. And then, around 4 p.m., Amy's brother called again, this time getting even more worried that she hadn't come home.
Such a good brother.
Yeah, right? I feel like my brother would have been like, eh. Who cares?
I don't know where she is.
Now, Amy's mom said she'll be home, but she continued to work a few more minutes. At this point, we can assume that it was strange that Amy hadn't come home yet. It was well after school. It was unusual. Then another call came in. This time, it was Amy on the phone. So right here, you may be thinking, okay, well, Amy is calling her mom from home to say, hey, mom, I'm home. I'm sorry I was running late or whatever. But her mom recalls the tone in her voice is unusual compared to her usual bubbly, happy self.
So I have to say, though, even though it was a little strange, she has to feel reassured. My daughter's at home. She's probably safe. It's probably okay.
I would say at some extent, but her daughter and her had such a close relationship, and she was usually like so bubbly, like, hey, mom, auditions went great, you know?
Right.
But this was strange. And then considering that she was late to school, like maybe it was the mother intuition. Something wasn't adding up. Like she just had this really strange feeling.
Yeah.
So anyway, they get off the phone and Amy's mom, she feels this wave of uncertainty rush over her. Something wasn't sitting right. She rushed home and then she realized that Amy wasn't home at all. She never got home.
She knew.
So as you can imagine, the intense strain of fear hung over the family and also over the town as the search for Amy began. It was all too strange. The bike was left at school, and that phone call from Amy to her mom was extremely chilling because she said that she was fine and at home when clearly she wasn't at all. Knowing that that phone call didn't come from home, where was she?
And there's no caller ID at this point. There's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking in the 90s, 89, 90.
Where did she make that phone call from? Was it a payphone? Was it someone else's house? Was it another state? Like, you really don't know.
So I'm going to make this short and sweet. Have you ever tried to break a bad habit and felt like you're paddling upstream with a spoon?
Twice.
Well, we've all been there. But here's a breath of fresh air. Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it healthier and more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative, award-winning flavored air device that does just that. So instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. And instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors.
Wait. So instead of bad, it's good.
Fume is good. It's a habit that you're free to enjoy and makes replacing your bad habit easy. Honestly, I didn't know what to expect about the taste, but the crisp mint and the orange vanilla are so good.
To die for.
Fume's got those natural, not too sweet vibes. It's refreshing in a just brewed cup of herbal tea goodness. Bottom line, Fume has served over 300,000 customers, and you can be the next success story. For a limited time, use our code SALAD to get a free gift with your journey pack. Head over to tryfume.com. That's tryfume.com and use code SALAD. Tryfume.com, code SALAD. Now, Amy Mihaljevic disappeared on October 27th, 1989 in Bay Village, Ohio. She was only 10 years old. The desperation that filled the Mihaljevics' home to find Amy, worried for her safety and wondering if she's ever coming home, leaked out onto the Bay Village area. That evening, her family went to the police to report her missing, and the police immediately launched a search. People of the community came together to help find this young girl. Flyers went out along with a massive search, but there was no sign of Amy. But everyone still held on to hope that Amy would come home. Days turned into months. And 104 days after she went missing, her body was found on February 8, 1990, in Ruggles Township, located in Ashland County, Ohio, by a jogger.
It's always a jogger. You know, someone, I guess it kind of makes sense because that's someone who might be on like back roads or, you know, something like that, who is actually being able to look around or like look into the weeds.
It does seem that way, like a jogger or a hunter, someone like that who's like, yeah, in the woods or like a desolate area that you're not normally in. The heartbreaking discovery of missing Amy turned into a devastating homicide investigation. Located along a secluded field, approximately 50 miles from where Amy was last seen in Bay Village, the young girl was found stabbed to death, which shattered her family's hopes of finding her alive. This horrific revelation brought deeper anger, confusion, and immense hurt, not only to the family, but also to the entire community. And as you can imagine, it came with chilling fear that spread throughout the area, knowing that this killer was out there, having taken the life of an innocent child at 10 years old.
I think for the community, this is something that hits you hard because you no longer feel safe.
And this was a very safe neighborhood, a very safe town.
Right. I mean, you obviously feel bad for the family, but then you start questioning, am I safe? Is my family safe? Could this have happened to me? Yeah. It's terrifying.
And then thinking back to that guy who approached Amy with this thick brown hair, it very well could have been this person
or that
responsible.
Or that poor little girl who saw something, but then thought, oh, it's probably nothing. Self-reflection, you know?
Yeah. Now imagine this abduction happening today and missing cases, they continue to happen. Unfortunately, but back around this time, we're talking 1989, 1990, kids aren't walking around with their cell phones, so there's not much to go by. Like Ricky said, the little girl who saw this guy approach Amy was really all that they had. Amy's mom was doing all that she could do, pushing to find her daughter's killer, even going on Oprah Winfrey's show to share the composite drawing of the potential suspect and alerting people to be on the lookout of people's behavior changing. Like if they had strong interest in religion all of a sudden, or a strong interest in drugs or alcohol, anything like that. And witnesses came forward who saw Amy on that day. And that's how we know that Amy was walking with her friend and told her that she was meeting up with someone. Also, the witness at the shopping plaza who gave the description of this guy, what he looked like, led to a composite sketch that was shared with the community. Now, witnesses who saw Amy on that day came forward, as we mentioned, and they provided crucial information. We have the friend who talked with Amy, and Amy telling her that she was meeting up with a friend. And then the other witness at the shopping plaza who gave a description of the man that Amy was seen with, which led to a composite sketch, which was shared with the community. However, narrowing down a man in his 30s with bushy brown hair in a city of about 17,000 people was challenging.
For sure.
Professionals in this field acknowledged the difficulty of obtaining precise details in this situation. I mean, imagine being in a busy ice cream shop as soon as school let out and noticing this older guy approaching a younger girl. Details may be a little foggy, like the hair color, was he wearing glasses, what color were the glasses? His overall appearance might be, you know, a little blurry. And this uncertainty made it tricky, and it made the list of potential suspects extensive.
It's strange to me that this was done on the exact day that the school held an assembly talking about the dangers of strangers, right?
Stranger danger.
However, I'm glad they had this conversation, especially back 89, 90, whatever, in the 90s. I feel like we never had that type of talk. Like, right. I was never really afraid of strangers.
Yeah, I kind of didn't really picture them as human.
Right.
Like, I kind of pictured them as, like, some kind of creature or something.
If I saw a grown-up in a public place, I'd assume it's someone's father or mother, whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, as a young child, you're not thinking of that. You're thinking, well, they seem nice and they seem like they know my mom.
Right.
And, I mean, he doesn't seem like a bad guy.
Right.
But that's what they want you to think. Now, like we said, when Amy's body was found, there were other items that could still hold answers to who kidnapped Amy and murdered her.
Oh, so this is still unsolved.
Yeah, this case has never been solved. Hmm. And as frustrating as it sounds, it's been over 3 decades. This case isn't solved. We don't know the extent of what detectives know, but there's a lot of speculation, there's a lot of suspicion, and, well, theories that surround Amy's case. Now, where Amy's body was located, there was also a blanket, her clothes that she was wearing, and a curtain that was found in the same field, but further away. These items have been kept with hopes that DNA technology will advance someday. The curtain was shown to the public in hopes that someone would recognize it. But as we mentioned before, there were a few things that weren't there, like her earrings, which were like a gold horse head. They weren't on her body. She was wearing these black shoes. They weren't there. So it's believed that whoever did this kept these things possibly as trophies or little things to remember Amy.
Right. Okay, so question. From the people who saw her, Amy, you know, at Baskin-Robbins or the plaza, whatever. Now, she wasn't threatened. Like, she didn't look like she was in distress. She seemingly just walked to the guy's car and got in the car and left.
Yeah.
So, I could assume there wasn't a struggle or anything like that. She seemed to trust the guy.
Yeah, there was trust there. There was, you know, reassurance that she's going to get this gift for her mom, and there's no danger surrounding it at all.
But we can assume this isn't a person she met prior. This most likely is a stranger.
We don't know. I mean, it could very well be. Now, there was belief that this person contacted Amy a few times on her phone. So this isn't just like one time he contacted. This has been like a series of times that he called, and then a number of times that he called her. This has been like an ongoing conversation that this guy has had with Amy, and now they're finally meeting up.
Okay. So I can assume she trusts him at this point.
Yeah, the trust is there for sure. And if you remember, while Margaret, Amy's mother, was at work, she got a call from Amy herself claiming that she was at home, safe, and she was fine. But Margaret felt uneasy about it because her usual bubbly self wasn't there. This call is believed to be from a local payphone in the area. So whoever did this, they knew a bit about Amy, unless Amy knew her mom's work number. Could this have been someone who knew where her mom worked? They got the timing right, the location right. No adults or parents would be around.
And how did this person get a hold of Amy in the first place? He was able to get her into the car without a struggle or anything, really.
Right. So a few of Amy's friends reported that Amy was in contact with this guy who kept calling the house, and she got multiple calls. And we mentioned this briefly before in this episode, but she was excited to tell her friends that she was meeting up with this guy with the intention of buying her mom a gift.
Wow. Horrifying. She trusted this guy.
Yeah. And other girls also reported getting strange, similar phone calls at their house weeks before Amy's disappearance.
So Amy wasn't the only victim.
No. It was a male voice telling them that their mom got this work promotion and asked if they wanted to get their mom a surprise gift to celebrate with her. And these girls who were called were located in different areas, so not at just her school, but all around the area.
Jeez. So how were all of these girls contacted? Were they from the same school or like a club, or are they kind of random?
So they were all random within the area, and it was soon identified that all of these girls were all connected to one location. The Lake Erie Nature and Science Center. There was a visitor logbook that contained personal information like names, phone numbers, addresses in 1989. However, when police go to search the area for this said logbook, it was nowhere to be found.
Wow. But that has to kind of narrow it down a bit in the search.
Yeah. Whoever it was, had access to this location. They had access to that logbook. They knew what was in there, where it was.
Right. So someone who maybe was a volunteer or an instructor or something.
Yes. And it's believed that this is a huge clue in this case, because whoever this person was, so like we said, had access to the visitor logbook at the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center.
So they know it. All the girls were in the logbook, but that logbook is nowhere to be found.
They never found it. Now, several suspects began emerging during the investigation. One notable tip involved a man whose house cleaners discovered a book titled The Girl in the Box, along with alleged photographs of the shopping center where Amy was last seen. However, when the police searched this property, the photographs were nowhere to be found. Kind of weird, kind of sus. Now, I wasn't able to find if this particular individual had any ties with the science center, the Lake Erie Science Center, but it's interesting. Where did those pictures go?
So what was the book about, The Girl in the Box?
The true crime book about an abduction, a kidnapping about a young girl. Now, as the search for the elusive perpetrator dragged on, another incident occurred during a Sunday morning church service. A man stood up claiming to be Satan and shouting, "I killed Amy Mihaljevic." He was immediately arrested. However, it was soon revealed that this man was diagnosed with schizophrenia and had not been taking his medication. And there was no connection between him and Amy's disappearance or murder.
So this is just some random dude that stood up and said he did it. Like, totally random.
Yeah. Now, another tip came in that is still being looked into today. And I actually found a lot of the information that we're going to talk about on a documentary called The Lake Erie Murders, which you can find on HBO Max. And an investigative journalist named James Renner, he gives some very interesting points into the investigation of this case. And he just so happened to be at CrimeCon, where we just were.
What?
Small world, right? I wish we bumped into him.
Yeah, we should have talked to him.
Because we were investigating this case, but I didn't even put the two and two together.
Yeah.
He was busy, we were busy. But he did talk a bit on this documentary, and he explained the suspicion surrounding a very suspicious man. Now, at the time, a middle school science teacher who worked at Amherst, Ohio, and taught at Nord Junior High School was known for having basically a mini zoo in his classroom around 1989, at the time when Amy went missing. This particular individual volunteered at the Nature Center that held many different creatures. This teacher also had animals of his own in his classroom, and James Renner even said that there were more animals in his classroom than at the Nature Center at one time. One thing that James Renner points out is when the police question him, he denies ever setting foot inside the Lake Erie Nature Center.
Well, that has to be easy to, you know, disprove.
Right? You would think. Now, there was even a photo of him with one of his students at the Nature Center.
There you go.
How can you even dispute that? But still, to this day, he just kind of, nope, don't know nothing about that.
Wasn't me.
Wasn't there ever. And a lot of his other students contradict his statement, and they even speak out about a number of times when he made suggestive comments or even inappropriate physical contact with students. Now, the crazy thing is when James, a guy who is fully invested into this case, was looking to speak with this guy, he was driving around and guess who he sees? This teacher just so happens to walk by.
Jeez, what are the chances?
Right? And so according to what James says on the documentary, he asks this individual about being at the Nature Center. And this teacher said that he never said that he wasn't there, but what he did tell the police is that he doesn't remember ever being there.
Of course.
Right. And that was basically the end of the conversation.
I mean, I'm on James' side. Like, it's totally crazy that he pretended that he was never there.
How could you?
Yeah. I mean, this is someone who teaches middle school science, who has a large amount of creatures in his classroom, who was known by multiple people he involved himself at the science center, but he's denying it. I mean, I'm with James on this one. I think we have him. People remember seeing him there.
Yeah. But unfortunately, it's all circumstantial evidence. There is no concrete evidence in this case that links him to the murder and kidnapping of Amy Mihaljevic. And many people who know of this case believe that he's innocent. Now, I found this clip of this news station called News Center 8 that did a lighthearted segment on this teacher whose name is Dean Runkle. Years ago, before he was ever a suspect or a person of interest, and it was a time when he was just known to be an amazing teacher, looking to give children a valuable education on science, animals, and their anatomy. It does make your skin crawl. So here, I'll give you a listen.
Who teaches probably the liveliest life science class you'll ever see.
And Denise is here now to guide us on a field trip. This most unusual classroom as we pay our weekly tribute to teachers.
It is unusual. When the 8th grade students at Nord Junior High called Dean Runkle's classroom a zoo, they're not kidding. And that's exactly the way he likes it. Oh, we're not talking about just a couple of mice or a guinea pig. Try an alligator, a prairie dog, iguana, snakes, piranha, an entire saltwater fish menagerie, and that's not all. There are 50 tanks and cages in all lining the walls of room 105.
This all belongs to me. It's my hobby, but it's a great hobby to have because they're my students. So they get to share with it.
In Dean Runkle's case, commitment to his job is an understatement. Between class preparation and zookeeping, he spends 16 hours a day here and doesn't take summers off. Sounds like quite a burden. Not at all.
I love it. I love the kids. They're young. They have the enthusiasm. It's just a lot of fun.
For many of these 8th graders, this may be their last exposure to life science in school, so Mr. Runkle likes to make it a memorable year.
Usually I sing when I do this, but we'll let it go. Yes, he's definitely an inspiration. He always challenges us to do our best, not only in science, but also in life as well.
See, that's the intestine right there. Beautiful. Excellent.
Yes. Every lesson in here, including the teen's very first earthworm dissection, incorporates a lot of hands-on learning. But Dean's classes are always sliced with fun as well.
I used to play ragtime piano professionally. I worked for Disneyland. That was before it was a Disney World many years ago. And one of the basic philosophies in entertainment is that your audience deserves the best show possible. And that's the way I teach. My students deserve the best.
Now, for 27 years, Dean Runkle has been bringing the world of life science to life for junior high students in Vermilion and now in Amherst. And for that, we'd like to offer Dean our heartfelt congratulations, along with a $250 savings bond and brunch at the Ritz-Carlton. He's got the right idea. Got to keep the interest up.
Oh, I knew he was a performer, and he's got the best audience of all, huh?
And you mentioned he works all summer. I'm sure he does. Otherwise, he'd have to take all those animals home.
That's
worth.
Thanks, Denise. That's our News at 5 Inside Edition is next.
Well, I'll be back.
Okay. It kind of gives me sexual predator vibes. Like, they're young. They have the enthusiasm. He works 16-hour days.
Yeah, me like, too.
His passion maybe isn't just science. It's
maybe
also
it's like the kids.
The kids.
And it's always a red flag when, you know, we hear these stories all the time. The guy worked for Disneyland and he worked jobs that always involved himself and are surrounded by, he was always surrounded by children.
So clearly the police have their eyes on him, right? I mean, maybe they didn't make an arrest or whatever, but like, where is this dude now?
Well, he's no longer a teacher. He's no longer living in Ohio. He actually fled the town and he's now living in Key West, Florida. He moved there in 2003. So after all of this stuff went down, he just got the hell out of Dodge. And yeah, police are definitely keeping their eye on him, I feel like. I mean, we don't really know. as far as we know, he's still living there and he's working as a fast food restaurant as manager.
He's working at a fast food restaurant as the manager. So he went from being a loving, influential teacher who loved kids in Ohio, probably loved them a little too much, to now managing what? Probably mostly teenagers probably at a fast food restaurant.
McDonald's.
McDonald's, teenagers, fast food restaurant.
Right. But the evidence they have against him, again, it all is circumstantial. Don't you just hate that?
I do.
And he's never been charged and he's never been named as a primary suspect. He has only been named as a person of interest at this point.
So no DNA evidence has ever been found, right?
No. Interestingly, there were items found that we mentioned near where Amy's body was found, like the curtain that was found about 300 yards away in the field from Amy's body. And it did contain Amy's hair, and it also contained hairs that belonged to Amy's dog. Hmm. So it's believed that this curtain was used to wrap up Amy's body or transport her body at some point. Maybe the hairs were on her clothes. But what's interesting about the curtain is it appears to be handmade. So someone may recognize this specific curtain.
So how does this not attach him to Amy?
Well, they're still doing DNA testing, so I guess we'll have to just play the waiting game.
Yeah. Now, is this something where technology was just behind its time? I mean, this is years and years ago. 90s. I mean, this is the 90s.
30 years ago.
So I would assume technology is getting better. Is this still something that we're looking
into?
That's
what we're hoping for. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for. Like us just talking about this case and getting it out there, or other podcasters, anybody, just keeping it fresh is going to help. You know, like how many cases have been solved recently in just the last couple of years with the technology being more advanced, you know, the DNA technology. So Dean Runkle, during his time while living in Ohio, he lived in different parts surrounding this same area. One location was called New London, Ohio, and that's the location where he was born and raised. And in this town, he lived in a farmhouse, which was owned by his parents, which was actually located just a few miles from where Amy's body was found.
Of course.
That house was burned down when he was like 6 years old, so nothing left of that house.
Right.
I was kind of interested, like, well, you know, were the curtains from that house because they were homemade? Who knows?
Right.
And to note, this particular area was not very accessible or even common to drive by because this is like a back road, you know, cornfields, nothing much happens on this back road. A jogger, you know, is jogging by once in a while. And we're talking 104 days she was found. So she was laying in this field for quite some time before anyone even, you know, realized to, hey, let's check out this field over here.
So I'm assuming she wasn't too far off the road even.
No, not too far off.
Why is that so common? You'd think if you're hiding a body, you would put it far away, away from the road. Like this is a place where people drive, people run, people walk, people can see.
I kind of get the feeling like they want them to be found.
Or is it just a panic situation where...
Or a panic situation.
Where they just...
Dump and go.
Dump and go, yeah.
Now, another really interesting piece of evidence that was found was these little gold fibers that were found on Amy's body, which just so happened to match the interior of a car that Dean Runkle was driving.
Well, did they do DNA testing of the car at least?
Well, it was looked over, but it wasn't fully analyzed, and the car has since been destroyed.
Of course.
And again, I mean, we're talking 1990s, DNA testing just wasn't what it is today. And it was believed that Amy was stabbed inside the car, like her blood could have been covering the inside of the vehicle, which was a gold-colored Grand Prix. Maybe it was cleaned up enough to where, you know, if you're just looking at it at a glance, you wouldn't see anything alarming. Like you wouldn't see blood.
Right.
But he soon sold this car after Amy's disappearance. Suspicious. And it was later found at a junkyard that was soon melted down and destroyed.
Shit. So we don't have anything. Like, all of that evidence is gone.
Yeah.
So are we assuming, though, that she never left the car?
Some investigators believe that while Amy was in this car, you know, like, she trusts this guy, and this guy's kind of keeping the trust there still. Mm-hmm. But as they're driving further and further away from the city and into this desolate area, back roads where there's nothing, Amy starts to worry and panic, and yeah, she's trying to get out, and she's fighting at this right point.
Well, we can only assume.
And it's believed that this is where he stabbed her, because Amy was found with multiple stab wounds to the neck and the throat area.
Okay.
And bludgeoned her and
all of that.
Yeah.
Now, do we know, I know testing wasn't what it is today, but do we know if there were any, I don't know how to explain it, but did he like mess with her sexually?
Really, the only thing that they can tell is that the underwear was inside out when they found Amy. So
they're assuming
that
there was
most likely
foul play, right?
Yeah. But yeah, the car was already destroyed, so whatever evidence was in there is now
gone.
Completely gone. But it is interesting that he was driving a gold Grand Prix with gold interior, like the dots are connecting, right? Right.
Now, I might have missed this, but were there fibers from that gold? I thought you said that.
Yeah. Yeah. There were fibers found on her clothing.
Clothing.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So that narrows it even further, even though we don't have, you know, a conviction or anything and it's still cold, but come on.
Yeah. Right. And like I said, a lot of people feel like Dean Runkle is innocent. Like, there's a lot of people who are like,
innocent?
Yeah, a lot of people. If you look on in different comments on different, you know, topics surrounding this case, they're like, Dean Runkle is innocent. He was my teacher.
Right. Right. But are those statements coming from a place of purity? Or are they coming from, like, are they, I mean, they're kind of tainted views, right? I had a really, really good encounter with this teacher, right? He can't be guilty. He couldn't have done this, but they don't know.
No. I mean, you never know. And I'm just speculating based on things that I read and things that I've watched. I could be wrong.
Right.
But I'm also human, and it's fun to kind of figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, we're speculating, but we're speculating also with some evidence, I would say. Some
circumstantial evidence,
but these things kind of point towards him, and they point towards him more than they point to anybody else.
Mm-hmm, right.
So he has to be under the radar.
Right. Now, advances in DNA technology have provided new opportunities for investigators to re-examine the old evidence of what is left. Authorities are hopeful that the new testing methods might yield more definitive results, which could finally identify Amy's killer. The ongoing analysis includes retesting existing evidence with improved techniques and exploring any new leads that arise. But it becomes challenging when the evidence, like the curtain or other items that was found in the area around Amy's body, could have been mishandled. You know, could the DNA evidence have been lost over the years?
Yes. Simple answer, but yes.
I know, looking into this case, I've been more invested, and I just really want Amy to get justice. Amy Mihaljevic was known for her exceptionally close relationship with her mother, often described as best friends by family members in documentaries. This deep bond made Amy eager to do anything to make her mother smile. When Amy received a phone call from an unknown man claiming that he needed her help to buy a gift for her mother, it seemed convincing to her, even though it would be strange for a 10-year-old to agree to such a request from a complete stranger. This pattern of deception was not unique to Amy. Other young girls from her school and the surrounding area received similar calls around the same time, suggesting a calculated approach by the perpetrator. These calls created a link among the victims, revealing a common method used by the abductor to gain their trust. The fact that these calls were all made to girls who had recently visited the Lake Erie Nature and Science Center, where they signed a logbook with their personal information, suggests that the perpetrator used this information to target them.
100%.
Amy's tragic story tells the vulnerability of children to manipulative tactics, especially when motivated by their love and trust for their parents. The saying goes, don't talk to strangers. And we both feel like it's important to educate our children on this. Predators are sadly becoming smarter and they're learning from the mistakes of other predators in the past. And now, in today's world, we are facing challenges that surround online. Knowing who your children are talking to is so important. I would suggest even keeping that door of communication open and avoid your child keeping things from you or sneaking off onto different apps. Bottom line is they're going to be on Snapchat. They're going to be on TikTok because their friends are on there. And I mean, you can still allow them to be, but I would also warn them about the creeps out there and the dangerous things out there.
I know for us, our son, this is years ago, but when he was very, very young, playing on PlayStation or Xbox, would be like, oh, I made a new friend. He's 18. It's like, dude, you're 7.
No. Yeah.
Not cool. Like, no.
And I mean, we were still learning as parents around then. Because I really wasn't, I was kind of naive. Like,
right.
Well, I mean, who's playing Roblox? Just a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
No big deal. No. It's a scary world out there, and we just have to be on top of it. Because, like I said, these people are just getting better and smarter and trying to one-up us parents. So, let's do better and prevent future tragedies. If we can prevent a child being kidnapped or lured into someone's vehicle just because of this podcast, that would be a success to me.
Yeah, 100%.
Now, I did leave one thing out that I forgot to mention. Dean Runkle, the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He left in 2003. So he left Ohio in 2003 to go to Key West, Florida, because he said he had
health problems.
I
remember you telling me about this.
But what's interesting is he just left his teaching job. You know, like he had a pension.
But he did what? He took a job as a manager at a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people think that's suspicious. I think that's insanely suspicious.
I mean, we said he was around 30-ish.
Right.
What was Dean running from?
Interesting. So what's interesting, though, is that during that time, teachers were now made to take fingerprints. They had to actually go and take fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
To be a teacher. Is that incriminating for someone like Dean?
Hell yeah.
Exactly. There is a crime scene. Now, he only needed one more year of teaching. And the only thing that kept him from, again, this was his passion. He is a natural born teacher. Everyone loved him. The only thing keeping him from finishing that one year to gain his pension is the new rule that he would have to take fingerprints.
I didn't catch that, but that's really interesting.
Super suspicious.
Yes, he is very suspicious. And gosh, I just wish we can just get something on this guy.
I know.
And I bet he's listening right now, because you know how like these predators out there, they like love to listen to their stories and mm-hmm. like relive them. Well, guess what, Dean? Time's up. Time to come forward. Time to confess. Give this family some justice.
Right.
And I do want to mention Margaret at the end of this case, because Margaret, Amy's mom, she lived every single day after her daughter went missing, fighting for answers for her daughter. And she went into a deep depression, you know, started drinking alcohol, and she divorced her husband, moved to Las Vegas, not because of like the missing case or whatever, but just because of, you know, their differences. And she lived in Las Vegas with her mom, where she eventually passed away. So she died not even knowing what happened to her daughter.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah, and you can just see like the pictures of her and the videos of her, just like her entire life has been just crashed.
Yeah.
You know, like a parent's worst nightmare happened.
It's awful. No justice before she died either, and she deserved that.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
So yeah, this case is really sticking with us. It kind of hooked us like a fish.
Yeah. So we presented this at our local library, just kind of like a brief discussion about the case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to really dive deep, you know, into it. But again, with technology advancing, I want to see some results. I want to see some closure. I mean, the mother isn't here anymore, but I mean, the community, everyone.
We all want answers.
Amy, she deserves it.
And we don't want these people to get away with this stuff. Like, I'm just so tired of these cases because it's like, I just want them to pay for what they did. But that's the closing of this week's episode. We'll be with you next week. And if you like our show or if you like this episode, just give us a, what is it, 5-star rating or a thumbs up or something?
Yeah.
Wherever you are, just give us some good feedback.
Some love.
We put some love into this episode and our show, so we would appreciate it.
Yeah.
On to the next one.
On to the next
one. What will we investigate next?
You know what, though? I really want cases like this to be solved so that we can create follow-up episodes.
Yeah, and have our crime salad side salads again.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just hear, like recently, the Gilgo Beach murders, there is two more victims. How crazy is that?
Insane.
This guy doesn't even look human. I hate Rex Heuermann.
Yeah, me too.
I just hate him so much.
Awful, awful, awful guy.
Well, I think that's the end. I think that was a pretty good first episode in our new little studio, which is like so awesome. And we don't hear footsteps. We heard a couple trains go by, but
there were trains. A couple motorcycles. I guess we can't really get rid of those crazy loud sounds.
There's life around us.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.